Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Brooke Colangelo to the broadcast. Brooke is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, an educational and trade publisher. He's held that role since January of this year. In the role, he's responsible for core IT operations and infrastructure services across HMH's global office network. Prior to his current role, Brooke was the CIO of the White House, a role he held since the beginning of President Obama's first term. Prior to that, he held several senior IT leadership roles, including roles within the Democratic National Convention Committee, the American Red Cross Hurricane Recovery Program, and QRS New Media. He's been recognized for exceptional information technology leadership in Computer World's 2012 Premier 100 IT Leaders, Federal Computer Week's Federal 100, and Information Week's Government CIO 50 list. Brooke holds a bachelor's degree with honors in political communications from the George Washington University. I recently caught up with Brooke in his office in Boston, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as he spoke about his assessment of his team upon arrival at Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as he discussed the methods he's used to build relationships within each organization he's been a part of, as well as a variety of other topics. Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Well, Brooke Colangelo, welcome to the Forum on World Class IT.
Thank you, Peter. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you. I wanted to talk a bit about your recent experience at Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and your transition from your time as CIO of the White House. This is part of a series of interviews we're doing with CIOs reflecting on their first 100 days. And you're the first in the series who has gone from government to the private sector. And I wonder if we could just begin generally speaking, Brooke, with your observations having crossed that chasm from the public sector to the private sector, what translated well, and what you found to be different either in a pleasantly surprising sort of way or in an unpleasantly surprising sort of way.
I've really enjoyed the transition, and I think what attracted me to HMH is this opportunity here and the really exciting piece about bringing technology to an organization, to an industry that's going to really affect outcomes. And that is very much about the same piece of what drew me to the White House. You know, my time at the White House was a little bit different. When I came to the office with the president in 2009, our systems were down 23% of the time in the first 40 days. And so my tenure there was really leading a turnaround, right? A night and day turnaround. And the intensity of that was incredible. The transition here to HMH, you know, we're undergoing a transformation, as is the entire industry, on how technology is going to enable and really help deliver and support better outcomes for education, for parents, teachers, lifelong learners, administrators, all the same, and so that we think about that. So my experience here, coming here, was a lot different in the sense that one, you know, the White House is, I think someone told me once, is like working on Wall Street. It felt like I was on the trading floor every day. And so the intensity of that was critical. I often tell folks, you know, they ask me this at dinner, you know, what's the difference? And I said, the entire dinner I made eye contact with you and my phone's in my pocket, you know, where my life at the White House, you know, I was always on BlackBerry. And when I went to the gym in the morning, I had an out of office on my BlackBerry for the hour and a half I was there. Here, the opportunity is so much more. And so my transition here has been, I often think that some of the same challenges here have even more intensity to them in the sense of the pressure on delivering really amazing and world-class products that will transform the education process. And that's daunting in a different sense of always having to react. It's the thoughtful, methodical, and innovative approach to how we deliver technology solutions. And so my transformation has been really about understanding and listening. And I think that is probably the biggest verb that I spent in the first 100 days is really listening to everybody in the process. If it was our internal customers, it was the technology teams inside the company, it was the executive leadership. You know, I spent so much of my time doing a listening tour across the company to really understand where technology is and hopefully to really listen inside of what everybody's talking about on where technology can be for HMH and for education. So it was a really amazing transformation and one where my husband and everybody else around me likes that my phone stays in my pocket now.
Much, much better from a personal perspective, I'm sure. I wondered in that period of transition, how did you prepare yourself? Whose counsel did you seek even before you joined HMH and had access to all of your colleagues on a more frequent basis? Were there certain counselors whose perspectives you drew upon? Were there certain things, certain periodicals that you were reading? How did you prepare yourself even before you stepped onto the campus for the first time?
It's a really great question. I think there's really no recipe that's out there for this. I know that because I probably talked to dozens, if not more than that, folks out there that helped me understand both the transition into a company like HMH, as well as a transition out of the government, as well as really understanding education and the power of that and working for a media company. So I spent a lot of time talking to all of my friends and the community to which I built in Washington over the last 15 years. I talked to anybody who had spent some time at a media organization, friends in education as well as in technology development on how to break the cycle and how to do stuff a lot more innovative and how to be creative. And, you know, I talked to a lot of my friends at the White House. I spent time, you know, talking to all of the leaders or experts that I had spent so much time supporting or working with over the last 4 years and trying to understand their advice in stepping into something so new, but understanding that. And then, you know, like any other good researcher, I read everything I can get my hands on. It's the Wall Street Journal to understand about or Forbes or any other industry magazine to understand about the technology trends. And that's always been my sort of process. But then added in there, I sort of took myself off of all of these different communities of what's happening within the government realm in Washington, D.C., and added in a whole different education specter and the conversations around Common Core or about different types of learning from adaptive to the different learning technologies and really just spent nights and weekends and any time I could getting my hands on this and reading it. And then, you know, the last thing I have to say is I spent some time talking to my family. My sister's a public school teacher and really just tried to understand her world and how technology could enable it better and drive better outcomes.
That's great. And you also had the, as you alluded to earlier, you had the advantage of a group of people around you who were tech savvy. The CEO of the company, Linda Zecker, is a former Microsoft executive, for instance. And so you mentioned in your transition, you began to speak with your colleagues about technology, about their perspectives. And I imagine you had the advantage that a lot of your peers would not have of having a populace outside of IT that was very cognizant of IT's role in the future transformation. Can you talk about some of those conversations and where you pushed and prodded and where you, as you pointed out, listened to a greater extent as to where they saw the vision for the organization going forward?
Yeah, and one of the most amazing things about working at HMH is I'm not fighting to have a seat at the table. My seat was there the day I arrived, and you know, I sat down with our CEO at 8:30 on Monday morning, and she laid out a list of the most detailed technology concerns that she had that, you know, the depth and level that she has as an understanding of technology is tremendous, but it's exciting, and it really opened, you know, my eyes to sort of working in a different industry as we are just really embracing technology to enable better outcomes throughout everything. If it's the customer experience for our internal staff, contractors, or vendors, or that experience that really is going to change our customers, our lifelong learners, or parents, students, and teachers. And so you know, I began those conversations. And like I said, on day one at 8:30, it was right there with Linda, and she was ready to have this conversation. And, you know, the exciting part about this is Linda has told me from day one, go out there and break some eggs. And I went back to her by Thursday and said, you know, hey, Linda, you know, would it be okay about XYZ, you know, trying to really just feel out your new boss, your new leadership. And she just looked at me without any hesitation, said, I told you to break some eggs, throw the whole carton against the wall, just go forward. And that was the most liberating and freeing process in coming here and understanding that, you know, let's just go try things. And that's been my mentality from the beginning is let's try it. If it doesn't work, it's okay. We'll retool it and keep going further. But we need to move fast and rapid and quick. And, you know, I also had the pleasure of working with so many other talented and amazing technology executives from Microsoft, from Oracle, from Monster, from Novell, and they all have a brilliant view into technology and a really very crystal clear way that they see how technology can help enable and drive better outcomes for the company and it's for our customers and for our internal staff. In some other roles, you often fight to have a conversation with folks, helping them understand, no, technology is not just fixing your iPhone or your Android device. It's about how we, you know, how we play this bigger role. And you almost kind of prepare yourself as a CIO to come in and have those conversations sometimes, not really knowing peers yet. And the exciting thing here at HMH is that there was a hunger. There was an amazement. Folks wanted to talk about everything from our ERP system, which was like, I'm not going to bring that up for a couple. No, people wanted to talk and they were trying to get on my calendar. And the opportunity here is just so great. And that's the exciting piece about it is that, you know, our customers, everything. And when I went on my town hall series, I've spent time talking to other staff teams outside of HMH and you end your meeting, you list out your objectives or who you are and you sort of wait for that one question. I wasn't waiting for one. I was trying to prioritize them in order because there were so many hands going up. And I'd say every one of my town halls probably spent 40 minutes on questions. Everything from like, are you going to get rid of this type of computer or how do you fix this? Or did you know about this problem? Or what's your view on X or Y and different types of technology methodologies to how do we deliver better solutions for our customers? And passion is unreal and it's exciting. You know, technology is a key deliverable in how we are going to differentiate the market.
As you thought about prioritizing those ideas that were bubbling up, there are a couple of different schools of thought, one of which is you get some quick wins under your belt to establish some momentum and to tell the team, your own team, as well as your colleagues outside of IT, that IT can deliver and can deliver quickly. And another school of thought that says you need to begin to develop some big pillars of things that you're going to be focusing on. And then there are others who would say that it's sort of a balance between the two. Was there an approach that you chose? And can you give us some examples of some of those things that you focused on in the early stages based upon some of those ideas that were bubbling up?
I think both schools of thought, or all three schools of thought, have some real validity there. I'll tell you, you know, I think you can understand by the end of this, you know, my school on this is I spent a lot of time listening to folks and really understanding that both I had to give folks a sense of hope. You know, technology was not going to be, you know, a back office system or a mindless, faceless support model that didn't get the results that folks listened to. So, you know, my belief has always been, and it's been who I've been, is you ask me for something, you're going to know where you stand, right? If everybody wants iPads tomorrow, I'm probably going to tell you that's not possible, but I'll tell you I can consider it, or I tell you I won't. And so my first view is always taking notes and making sure I'm very responsive to people. But I do believe in leading transformations, and I also think in your first 100 days, you have to show decisive action. And you have to show teams that if it's not incredibly clear wins, right? I think it's really tough to make a win on an ERP system in the first 100 days. We know that these are incredibly detailed and complex issues. So my view has always been to make as many significant broad wins as possible. And that includes stabilization of our infrastructure environment so that we could grow a lot more rapid in a seamless process here, as well as be able to, you know, keep any other issues from from happening. Another one that I instituted was a program we call here Ask a Tech. So we created our own version of the Genius Bar so that folks who had tech issues could come up and ask someone. And that was just after listening to folks and listening to frustrations within the team, I knew we had to do something. And, you know, as a traditional IT person, I think we always want to be thoughtful and think through every process. And I just looked at the support team that was going to create this. I said, just go. Just go. Don't worry about the perfect space. Don't go worry about it. Just start asking, setting up office hours, letting people walk up, doing this and giving this enhanced customer experience. And then I think there's just really simple things that across the company, you need to send messages that are, I'm listening. If it's integration of single sign-on things that we know are simple and can be quick wins across it, just do these so that you get these really incredible momentum behind you. At the same time, through that process, I spent a lot of time really developing a strategic plan. And I did it a lot different from any other time that I have at any other company. What I did was I sat down with staff and I listened, as I mentioned, but then I offered my technology team to volunteer who wanted to be on the organization, knowing it's not designed by committee, but designed by leadership here on how we wanted to build a strategic technology plan. And we worked on that together, and we ultimately worked with different organizations within, outside of technology, to articulate a technology plan. And we rolled that out the last month or so that really kind of focuses on two things. HMH Forward, which is moving us to radical simplification, delivering really rock solid technology that will help us grow, and really starting off with customer first and technology to follow. And so the mindset there is that we need to be focused on that customer experience, that user experience, and then design the technology behind that.
As you thought beyond strategy about people and process and technologies, and certainly you've begun to articulate some of the technology point with the radical simplification, how quickly did you take action, whether it was based on organizational changes of one sort or another, or process changes, whether that was reconciling processes, eliminating some, and then the technology footprint that you were managing? How did you think about that continuum of change relative to topics like those three?
Starting off at coming into an organization, I think understanding the real true value of an organization is the people. We all know, we all work in technology, and we know that technology does not work without great people. And the people are the core of HMH, and they're the passion, they're the engine that drives this company to deliver some of the most robust products out there. And I have taken the time to really understand these processes and really now align them to that strategic vision. I think as we think through both process and technology, what you need to do is first lay out that vision. And that's what I did with Customer First and HMH Forward. And then align those under that strategic vision, get the buy-in from everyone from the board to the CEO across the teams, and then align to that vision of how we're going to build for the future. As it goes for processes, I think that there are some that are sort of natural as leaders that you can see where there needs to be better alignment. And frankly, I think there was a strong need for technology leadership when I arrived and saw different areas where there was folks, everybody kind of not taking ownership of a certain issue. And if it was a hosting provider or vendor management, certain issues that we needed to do. So what I also did in those first 100 days or so was identify those problem areas that we all know that are owned by the CIO, and just raise my hand and said, I'm taking over this agreement, and please let me know if anybody else disagrees. And I'll tell you, there wasn't one time that anybody raised their hand and said no. It was more like, thank you. And that was outlining really the clear management organization that we needed to put in place to deliver some new results.
As you thought about this radical simplification of the technology footprint with the HMH Forward plan, as you looked across the infrastructure and architecture that you inherited, what was the process of thinking about going through a simplification process?
You know, it started first on the listening tours and really understanding what people were complaining about. And then as a term that I learned from someone else, meta-listening, and really listening past that problem and understanding the fundamentals. So I was constantly hearing about this system or that system. And then, you know, as a technology person, I would say, don't those two systems do the same thing? And so what I learned as, you know, as we grew, as any company, and as anybody in sort of life, right? We all now have sort of a computer, a tablet, a phone, maybe two tablets, maybe two or three computers. We're all sort of, it's rather complex. And we all need to take that methodical thought process and understanding, how am I going to save? Is it going to be in my personal email contacts, my work contacts, my, you know, I still deal with this in scheduling. Which schedule is the real schedule of my life? It is my work schedule. I made that decision like 5 years ago, and I've just decided that my work schedule owns my life. And so here was that meta listening and understanding that the complexity didn't have to be so complex. And really, the simple solution wasn't buying a new fancy CRAM, ERP product, anything. It was really just like reducing them. Reducing, integrating, and making sure we have some of the best products and technologies inside of our company. We've bought world-class technologies. It's now my job and my team's job to fully integrate these across our company and really, and think about the same way that we're delivering now products and services to our customers, delivering them inside, having a unified look and feel. We all have an outsourced expense management system or use a different portal to manage performance management. And this is traditionally any CIO's challenge. My view on this is, let's get a unified look and feel. Let's get a comfort factor that we know where all these things are. It's not that I'm going to be able to sort of change the software development of all these, but there's going to be a fuller integration and a different experience for that internal customer, just like we're driving for that external customer on the platforms and technologies that we're also building.
And as you thought about measuring the progress or lack thereof for that matter, what were some of the metrics or key performance indicators that you put in place, Brooke? How did you assemble a dashboard of sorts to determine that progress was in fact being made in the first 100 days and then beyond?
I think your key point to that is measuring. And I often say to my team and say in life, you know, if you don't measure something, you can't improve. You don't measure, I'm a runner, and if you don't track your per minute mile and your overall time, you can't get faster, because you don't know that. And my view is that data should be part of our DNA, and that we need to measure and use data to make lots of decisions, not all decisions, but most decisions, and that we need to put this as part of our entire mentality and methodology into how we go forward. And measuring will show success. You know, a great example of this is just one thing that I thought was, you know, I'd gotten several complaints from customers on this. And so we took some action. We streamlined getting on audio conferencing calls, right? There was half a dozen prompts and stuff like that. We estimated within the next year, we'll be able to save 270 hours of HMH employee and contractor time just by streamlining that. It's a simple number, but it speaks to the bigger power of when you measure something, how you can articulate and show those improvements.
That's great. You mentioned the process of developing your strategic plan, and you mentioned the engagement of various members of your team who could opt in to the contribution toward that. You also talked about your conversations, your listening tour, and your meta-listening with your colleagues to understand not only the issues that were articulated, but the issues behind those issues. As you think about meshing your own plan and those two main pillars toward that, what's the process then of fitting that into the broader plans of the organization, especially since you do have such a tech-savvy business community across your organization, even outside of IT?
You know, I think the great thing is that we started out with a wonderful and really visionary plan from the leadership. So, you know, my view was really aligning to that plan and supporting the vision of our CEO and our board. And that was easy, in my opinion. And that was really, it was succinct, crystal clear, and really powerful to align ourselves by that. Secondly is, you know, our CEO, I think, creates the best collaboration and experience I've ever seen between executives. She has a monthly staff meeting and an incredibly regular operations meeting on everything that we need to talk about that is where we're going. And I often speak at this on either technology issues or the technology plan and how we're aligning to it. And then lastly, you know, in everything that we do, we align to this message of customer first and HMH forward and how these things fit within that. And it's been a part of our sort of the team management within the technology team here so that we can really align that brand and how we're going to deliver the strategic initiatives across that.
You operate in an industry that has really been transformed substantially in recent years, and technology has such a big role to play in that, and which must have been exciting for you. You come from an organization which is as exciting as it gets in the White House, but technology isn't necessarily the key of transforming all that the executive branch of our government does. Now you find yourself in a place where IT is so critical to the very essence of what the business is doing. Can you talk a little bit about your vision for technology in your industry and, of course, in HMH more specifically?
Peter, you hit it right on the head there. You know, this is why I'm here. Both the mission itself really attracted me in really driving better outcomes and changing education. And it is such a global issue for the world and how we do it. But also, I think that, you know, we're really in the startup world of the dot-com and the transformation of education. As I was thinking about coming over here, I heard a really famous tech investor, and someone said, you know, where you were there with Facebook, then you were there with Twitter. You know, you've been on these forefronts. Where else are you going? And this famous investor said, education. That is the next place for disruption. And I think better than any other organization, HMH is poised for that. And I think, you know, technology is not just giving a book to a child on an iPad or a Android device. It's not just replacing paper for a screen or it's about supporting and enabling an instructor to provide a better outcome. It's about enabling and adapting to either a learning process, right? So I always think, and I give the example, if you're an audible learner versus a visual learner, I'm a visual processor, and that's how I learn. And so without something visual, I have a hard time comprehending things. It took me, you know, 30 plus years to realize that fact. And now we have technology that can identify that and adapt to that. And that adaptive technology and that transformative experience coupled with really the best teaching experience in the world and amazing home environments and amazing students and amazing curriculum, the best content in the world will really change that outcome. And so that is the piece here is that, you know, with HMH, we have the most amazing content. And technology is going to enable an enhanced or adaptive view of that content to drive even better outcomes. And that's the opportunity.
As you think back on your first 100 days, you're now, of course, well past the first 100 days. Are there any things you'd do differently if you were to do it over? What do you think about that?
I would probably tell you the one thing I would do faster than ever, and you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but is I would have gotten out listening faster and quicker. You know, and that was coupled with sort of trying to understand and moving to a new city and understanding so much. I thought I was pretty fast out the gate, but as I look back, I would have been to more offices, more meetings, more staff meetings, more conference calls, and really gotten in front of our customers and the community here to really understand more faster, if anything else. And I think just listening in this process is the best that you can do to really understand what's going on.
Wonderful. Well, Brooke Colangelo, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing some of your experiences and what sounds like a tremendous journey that was much more than simply the move from Washington to Boston, but really a new world that you've entered in this part of your career. It sounds very exciting and certainly wish you all the best.
Well, thank you, Peter. I had a great time today and really enjoyed our conversation.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat believes in the power of openness and shared knowledge to transform how we all do business. Learn more at redhat.com. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.